Again, welcome. Good morning. Be with everyone. I did want to just again thank all of our flock, those who consider yourselves a part of Beggar's Gate, and just the opportunity we have to do ministry together. Sometimes one or another of us is the tip of the spear, and it can feel sometimes like the marriage ministry is one, you know, just a limited thing. But I think we counted up to 18 or 20 people that were, you know, had hands in helping to produce that yesterday. And so from setting up and food, and just appreciate all of you jumping in to help that go, people helping out. And we do have some guests come down from Casper. Love to hear you. Got anything, any reports from the North Country you want to give Justin on how what God's doing in your midst, or...
We had with the marriage stuff, we had essentially eight couples go through stuff. Nathan came up a few weeks ago. I can't keep track of time. We had seven couples come down, just seeing the huge need for that up in Casper, and a lot of interest in that. So we're really praising God for that, and
how are you guys doing? What's going on here? How can we pray for you and your ministry?
No, we're doing good. We actually, not too long ago, kind of out of the blue, got asked to adopt a young 20-month-old boy. So we're in the process of doing that, and it's a lot. Yeah, it's noticeable. It's a big enough shift in our world, in our family. Seeing the effects.
How old's your next kid?
It's like
kind of twins. Irish twins, at least.
Yeah. They like to fight over stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, we sure appreciate partnering with you. I know some of you have never even been through it. You've been around a while, but it really is central to how we see it. See who God is, what he's like, what he's trying to grow in the world. This idea of being interconnected, and it really does tee up, and it's one of the reasons we're starting this new this series. It's the book stimulated some new thinking. If you've been around very long at all, so I think 2012 is when we coined the phrase, the definition of being a disciple is someone who is with Jesus, someone who is becoming like Jesus, and someone who is in ministry for Jesus. We're participating in it, and so that's been our definition. So that preposition's been around a long time. I think one of the things that's good about this is to consider, what are the alternatives? So if you're not going to live with, in a biblical idea, maybe we don't even have a clear understanding of what that means to walk with, live with, minister with, dwell with the presence of God, maybe we have a good definition, maybe we don't. But how does that get sideways? How do we get off track from this thing that I want to be with you? And today, and so we're not going to go over all this today, I think, 2 weeks, next week's Mother's Day. Rob's going to be sharing, both Nathan and I will be out of town next week. We'll be in Iraq, as most of you know. I hope we'll be in Iraq. If we're not, we'll be somewhere between here and Iraq, if we don't make it all the way. But we will, we'll be doing these same relational things related to marriage, relational theology, how to build team, how to build community in your church. It's all interrelated with this idea of the nature of God being with Emmanuel. Does that make sense? And I think you're going to have fun 100 years from now meeting people from around the world that you helped hand some very important things about how to be the people of God that you don't get to meet in this life. But what you did, what you're doing, it's just a little spattering. You know, eight couples from Casper, that's awesome. But it's the kind of information, the kind of life transformation that tends to get handed off. And it's like that yeast that's working through a lot of mission teams, a lot of areas. And I think you're going to really have fun here. And wow, this really went a long ways. And I've told you before, if you're running in my circles, if you're in a circle with me, it's not my circle, but if you're in a circle with me, God will not let us know what the fruit is because I'm so arrogant that I'll think it was me. So I'm sorry, you're going to have to wait for eternity to see, because he's not going to let me know if we do anything great, because I'll try to take credit, and I just know that about myself. So unfortunately, that means you may not get to either. So what is it to be with in light of under or over or from or for? And really, if you boil this down, again, Nathan's going to unpack how we get sideways in these. These are the religiosity kind of ways we approach God rather than just being with him, which is what he calls us to be. Does that make sense? And so we have different agendas than God because he wants to be God. We've talked about the circle and we step into it and he's there, he's king there. And he moves us through life, through valleys of darkness, the land of blessing, the sun is shining, places of sorrow. And the whole idea is, as humans, we're trying to avoid those places and create our own existence. And so we will choose some of these other means. And we try to manipulate who God is, what he is, what he's promised. And there's just this simple idea that he wants to walk with us. David came up with this graphic. I don't know if this will be through the whole of this, but I just love the picture of a father and a child. I don't know if it's a boy or girl. Doesn't really matter. Just walking in this dependence. And that little child is not going to be determining the agenda for the day. The father is. He's going to walk them through some things. Maybe really fun things, maybe hard things, maybe physically challenging things. I don't know, but they're going to walk, and God's going to lead. And that's the foundation of with is, where is it rooted? Why is that important? And I believe it's because it's the very essence and nature of God. So I'm going to try to do something a little bit different today. It's not rooted in the book at all, but it is this idea of laying a different kind of foundation for us. None of the information, none of the verses will be new to if you've been around. Some of you have never probably heard this. But for most of us, these ideas are pretty familiar. But I'm trying to just build a really strong case that this is not an optional philosophical, oh, gee, this is one way to do it. But it's at the very heart of who God is, what he's done, what he's asking us to be. And that changes it from something interesting to consider to, oh my goodness, I need to put this in the middle of how I think. Just like we would with the gospel or anything else. Okay, so just a couple things to keep in mind. In cultural paradigms, you've seen this if you've gone through the perspectives class. There's different kinds of cultures. In the West, we tend to be kind of a truth-based culture. You know, guilt, innocence. You know, what's accurate? What's true? The whole idea of modern thinking, of logic, all those things float out of the West, and we try to build foundations. Is it true? And even in our own culture, that doesn't necessarily. So inner-city culture may not have that same standard of truth and innocence. It may lean some other directions. But that shapes our Christianity, and that's why I want to talk about this for just a minute. This idea, both now and in church history, shapes our traditions. It shapes how we think. It shapes how we are we lined up correctly. Some of those prepositions that are off track, they're not with God, but they're about pleasing or pursuing in different ways or manipulating God. A lot of those are rooted in this idea that what's the truth, and am I lining up with it? Am I okay? Is my standing good? And it's not this proximate kind of standing or this relational standing. It's my own righteousness. Does that make sense? And that's one of the ways we really get sideways. The other thing it does is it shapes how we worship. Okay, so the other two kind of big ideas around the world, there would be a shame honor culture. The Middle East tends to be, Asia tends to be more shame and honor. Fear and power would be more where there's a lot of mysticism, a lot of, maybe some of the Hindu world would be in a fear power. There's a lot of manipulation of spirits and gods and demons and things in that world. But if you can think of a witch doctor or something like that, that culture that would practice black magic or voodoo, that would be in a fear power culture, where they're always trying to manipulate the forces of evil and keep them at bay. And it's different ways of thinking. We look at it and go, well, that's goofy. I hope you say that. But I would say it's also goofy to think just it's all about truth and guilt. or guilt and innocence. There's more to life than that. And so what we've shaped, and I think in church history, it's done damage to what God was trying to establish. So for 1,500 years, minus the first 200 maybe, when it was all getting kind of shaken out and formed, but once there was a formalized liturgy, some would say it started earlier than that. I don't think it probably did, but we could debate that. Once there was this established liturgy, everything was designed to look back, to deal with guilt and innocence every time you got together. We think of going to church every week or so and as being kind of that's the rhythm. That is not church tradition. They every day sacrifice Jesus again. And the literal blood and the literal flesh of Jesus is manifested again in Mass all over the world, saying it's all about this moment in history where Jesus died. And that becomes this looking back. I'm innocent, I'm guilty. And then the liturgy of the year with Lent and Advent, it's like it's happening again. It's happening again. What are we doing? That was the foundation. We keep looking back to this doorway where our life with God began and defining it by. Everything's at that gate. No. We're out here now. We have the whole world to live in and walk with God and see Him working. So appreciated. Travis and I did not in any way collaborate, but that's exactly how is God real to you today? We don't even do that. I'm forgiven. Yes, move on to a life with God. That foundation is laid. And so we spend, throughout church history, that's all that ever got accomplished, is just keep fussing over the foundation. Let's build a life with God. Let's experience the presence of God. So here's this idea of being with. We celebrate and think about what He has done for us, which is true and good and honorable, and it's commanded to remember that is our firm foundation. Now today, as we leave here, are we going to build anything on that foundation? Are we going to express anything about our walk with, our life with God as we stand on this foundation in this sure place where identity is concrete and secure? Are we going to expect Him to show up? Now, I'm not saying we're going to have visions or audibly hear His voice. Is He real? Is He moving? Is He doing things? Does He have the capacity to speak and to nudge? You know, that sense that He was with, protecting, with the story of the burglar. Do you sense that? Is He real? It seems like He should be. It's God peeking through, not just concepts. Okay, we're going to build really quickly, again, a lot of this will be reviewed for many of you, but I want to lay this out very clearly, because when God tells His story, when God tells His story about His interaction with creation and specifically humanity, he tells it in a very specific way. And I believe He's very intentional. He's very intentional about how He tells His story. First of all, that He uses story rather than just lists. Here are my attributes. He talks about Him being a person, interacting, speaking with a face, relationship. So here we go. We're going to go through this really quick. First thing is this. First big idea is, who is God? What is He like? That's the big question that gets answered here. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image after our likeness." I believe Genesis 1:1 is the first time we see the Trinity. If you look at the Hebrew, there's the Spirit, there's the Word, there's things going on there. All the roles of God are being revealed even in Genesis 1:1, but it's not as explicit as this. So we'll start here just so we don't have to build a strong case. Let us make man in our image. God is plural, after our likeness. So what are we going to be as we reflect His image, as we bear His image? There's things that He's trying to accomplish there. And let them have dominion over the fish. He establishes dominion over the whole world. He establishes this stewardship that He wants us to walk in such a way that His image is born and we do what He would do. That's important. Walking with means we are in cooperation with the nature and character of God with whatever we're doing. Not separating out and coming back. Sometimes, church, I'm not saying you, I'm just saying the church in the West is a lot more fear power oriented than most of us would like to admit. Oops, I forgot to do this right thing. Now the weebie-jeebies are going to get me. And if we put the name God on that rather than a Hindu demon, it's all the same thinking. God's waiting to punish us. So this is the heart of God. This is his mission statement in the creation of humanity and the management of the planet. This is it. What should we be doing? This is it, bearing his image. And then so he created them, man, and this is man, mankind, humanity, and then he delineates that out. And he creates this male and this female and says, look, this is significant. There's different attributes, there's different roles, there's different ideas being expressed in what I want to, how I want my image to be born. And you know the story, you jump in Genesis 2. In between those two verses, there was only one, Adam. Eve had not been pulled out of mankind yet. And God said, it's not good. Well, why wasn't it good? Because it was not yet relationship. It was not yet plural oneness. It was not yet a state of being that said we are connected. It was simply one person. It was a number. And he wanted something more. He wanted it to be an image where God is not, the idea of God being one God is not a numerical value. That is a state of being. That's an identity. That's with. When we're united, we are with. We get absorbed into this body of Christ as well as with others. So God saw everything he had made, and behold, it was very good, and there was evening, and there was morning the sixth day. So finally, when there is relationship, bearing oneness, they've been formed, they're formed into a covenant couple, forming one flesh, just like there's one God, now we're one flesh in marriage in that relationship, and that was God's desire for the first humans. I don't know, shortly after this, at some point, not very long after this, the fall occurs. So I don't know what his first best plan for all human relationships was. We don't know, because it got broken in the fall. And so the idea that everybody was going to have their assigned mate and all those kind of ideas, and even the idea of death, and everything got blown up with the fall. But yet this intention is still present there. So the big idea here is, what is God like? He is relational. He wants to be relational, and he wants us to express that relationship with him. He wants us to be joined with him, okay? Now, jumping to Genesis 6, this is right before the flood occurs, we see the heart of God. He looks at all that's happening, and most of us in our heads, because of those other prepositions we might use, see this as an angry moment, as a time when God is just disgusted with the behavior of human beings. And we see a very relational God. He had this intention of connection and care, of interplay between he and his creation that was lost in the fall. He's in the process now of trying to grow up a people that he can have relationships. So, but this is his heart. This is what's going on. So the Lord was sorry. I thought he was angry. No. He's sad. He had ever made them and put them on the earth. It broke his heart. This is the posture of your God. Not, you jerks, why are you messing up my plan? He looks and goes, oh, this is so sad. So much potential. I made you in my very image. I put my thumbprint on all of you. And somehow you've just completely neglected, completely turned away, and his heart is broken. That's what God is about. Well, why would that be? Because he's relational and he wants to experience relationship with us. He doesn't want us to just keep the rules. Check the box. Okay, you're okay. I won't crush you today. He's missing, he's grieving the loss of relationship. I am sorry I ever made them. And that's not, I regret, I'm going to, you know, I wish I would have done it different. I'm sad. sad it's rolled out this way. He knows there's going to be a massive, whoever was at the Creation Museum or the Ark, how many people probably were estimated to be on the planet at that time?
Two and
19 billion people. Just if you do the math on multiplication of humanity, that's about how many people were there. It's a lot of people. And that's what God's looking at, God, like, oh my goodness, this is not what I wanted. Then you look at the prophets as you go through the book, and the prophets, what image did God use most often? I guess I haven't cataloged it exactly, but this is the one that seems really present to me when you go through the prophets, minor and major. What is the relational image of the behavior of the nation of Israel does God paint over and over and over again? Anybody? The unfaithful wife. So what's he saying? What does it feel like when his people don't want to be with him, don't want to walk with him, don't want to be present with him? It feels like we're committing adultery. So the heart of God, that's what he communicates so clearly. So you can imagine the emotional state if you walked in and found your mate being unfaithful. And God says, that's exactly how I feel. That's how I feel. God has asked us to see him as one we are called to be in relationship with. And so what's he doing? What's his mission? So we've looked at who God is. He's this relational being. He's created us to enjoy and to walk in that with him. And then his mission becomes this. Colossians 1, 15 through 20. He is the, speaking of Jesus, he is the image of the invisible God. Now, God incarnate, he comes to earth. Finally, this is the last stage of this redemptive plan. For by him all things were created in heaven and earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities. All things were created through him and for him. For this Jesus, this husband. And he is before all things, and in all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning, the firstborn from the dead, that in everything he might be preeminent. So what is God's agenda? What is God's mission? That as the Lamb is lifted up, King Jesus is lifted up, there's a mission going on. And this is it. And through him, Jesus, to reconcile to himself all things. That's different than to make sure their sins don't send them to hell. This is not a judicial idea. This is a relational idea. The idea of reconciling, it's a relational idea. You're back to back, you're opposed. Reconciling means now we're free to come back face to face. That's the mission of God. Now, to do that, all of our sins have to be paid for. I understand that. But that is a necessary step. That's not the goal. That's a great outcome. The goal is to be face-to-face with God again through this preeminent King who's trying to reconcile all things to himself, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace so that possibility of their reconciliation is by the blood of the cross. Absolutely. That's why we remember it. But that's not the end of the story. Oh good, I'm forgiven. I'm going to go live my life. No. I'm forgiven. Well, now what, King Jesus? Where are we going? What are we going to do? I came to give you life. I've got life. What kind of life? Life to the full. What's that mean? Walking with him. Living a life. We're in that valley of death and sorrow and darkness and loss. We've got our hand in his hand saying, I am terrified. But I am with you. I look to you. I love that dog. What a concentration. Fix my eyes on who? Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. It's dark, scary. Where's the face of Jesus? That's what the cross did. It made it possible for you to do that. To walk with Jesus in the abundant life, face to face, so you can put your eyes on him and all of his attention. And I don't know how you feel. I've met several people recently. I just want to be really clear about this. Part of God being omnipotent and omnipresent is you're not taking a little piece of him away from something else by spending time with him. That's a really common thought among Christians. I didn't realize that. God can be fully with you, fully present, doesn't have to go, wait a minute, let me stop over here and come over here. How can God hear all the prayers? Because he's omnipresent. It's not about the number of prayers. You're thinking as a creature. He's not limited by time or space or how many voices he hears. You have such a small picture of God. Oh, he died for my sins, so now I can be happy and healthy and wealthy. No, you can walk. All of you can walk as a bride with a bridegroom, as a servant with a king, as a brother, as a sister to the King of the universe who is reconciling all things to himself. That's your destiny. That's your identity. You don't have to manipulate him. There's this glorious opportunity to be with him. I love the book of Matthew because it bookends. It bookends this idea. She'll bear a son and you shall call his name Jesus. Jump down to verse 23. The virgin shall conceive and bear a son and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us. It is not God, the kicker of tires and lighter of fires to straighten out your behavior. That is not the name he gave himself. I want to be with you. And I want you to be with me. And I want you to hold such a high value on relationship because that, in my essence, is God speaking, is the only thing that matters, is if we can be in this connected state and live out of that place. Here's the deal. I want to remind us of this. This promise in Acts 1:8. But you'll receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you, and you will be my witnesses in Jerusalem and all Judea and Samaria and to the ends of the earth. And so here's that power, fear, power kind of where it can come in. We have this idea that if I have my quiet time, if I go to church, if I do whatever obedience kind of things that I need to do to make sure God doesn't get ticked with me or withdraw his blessing or whatever it is, whatever little manipulations we might try to pull in our heads, that somehow then we'll have access to his power. And it's one of the broken ways that we try to walk out life with God. Here's the deal. You have to understand this. This is so crystal clear. His power never leaves him. Could you just, in your head, repeat that. Jesus' power never leaves him. So what's the answer if you want his power? He doesn't partition it out. Abide in me and I in you, as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vines, connected, rooted in, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, separate from me, you can do nothing. And in the Western evangelical church, the idea of a quiet time, of devotions, we go in, we plug in, get all charged up, and then we just unplug and run like crazy trying to do good things for Jesus. We go, where's the power? Come on back over here. Here's the power. He holds it in his hand. Thanks. No. It stays with me. You want to experience power today? You stay with me. My power will not depart from me. It will not. The power of God never departed from the Father. It was always Jesus' connection to the Father that allowed him. He was not, it's one of the awful things about church history, that Jesus becomes this not really human kind of spiritual being that sees all. It's like God, but he just happens to have skin sometimes. Sometimes he doesn't. It's just this weird philosophy. He was human in his limits. He had no power apart from being connected to the Father. That's what the scriptures teach. He had no authority apart from being connected to the Father. You have no power, no authority, no opportunity to do good apart from your connection to King Jesus. That's the way it rolls right now. John 15, couldn't be any clearer. But we have these religious things that we try to do to access power and safety. And no, it's him. It's him. It will not depart from him. Real quick reading of this. This is God's goal for you out of Ephesians 3. I'm just going to jump right into 17. This is the goal of God. This is the prayer of Paul, but this is God's intention, inspired prayer, so that Christ may dwell in your hearts through faith. Not visit your hearts, in faith. Not occasionally spatter some pixie dust of power into your hearts or revelation or transformation. He wants to dwell in your hearts through faith. And then going down further, and you will be filled with all the fullness of God. That's the point. That's the goal. Not to keep looking back. Oh, I'm forgiven. Yes. And now we can walk with God. I would not want to go to Iraq if I had to plug in and run across the globe. I fully expect God is going to be there with us. And if we have a COVID test and we fail and we're stuck in 5 days in some airport somewhere, God will be with us. God will be with us. Do you have that expectation, or is it something you have to manipulate? So he wants to be with us. God is relational. Here's these three parts. God is fundamentally relational. It's one of the very first things we learn about his attributes. You can infer he's powerful because he speaks trees into existence. I get that. But what's he like? He's relational. He has this incredible call through his people, through the redemptive plan, that he wants to be with us. That nature, he wants to share it with us. He wants to walk with us. And then this last little phase, what is his plan for us? That it's so different than the Western way of thinking. I do not ask for these only, but also for those who will believe in me through your name. What that big idea there is, this means everybody that whoever believes in Jesus for salvation, that now he's talking to you and everyone else on the planet. This is his heart. This is Jesus praying to the Father in the garden right before he's crucified. That they may all be one, just as you and Father are in me and I in you. That they also may be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. This is such a thick sentence or two. I don't know if it's a sentence or a thought. It's so thick. What's God's standard? What's his hope for you? That somehow you would know you're saved and then just be isolated and off doing your thing and finding your way and then, you know, spend a little time, work the magic stones, whatever it is we do. No. I want to walk with you, and I want you to find your place in this interconnected family of God. So critical. Why? Because that's revealing the nature and character of God. When we live well together, when we love each other, when we don't insist on our own way, when we say, yes, we're going to cooperate and care, and when you're hurt, we stop and care, and when you're excited, we stop and celebrate. That's our standard, not isolated. Okay, you have your walk with the Lord, I am walk. No. We have a walk with the Lord as a people. That's his intention here. What's the outcome of that? It's where our power is. That's our testimony. Only three times in all the New Testament does God make a promise the world will know that I'm with you. And it all relates to how we love each other. And it's all in this section of Scripture, 1 and 14 and 2 and 17. Okay, the stakes are pretty high on us getting this. Boy, if I was just better educated, then I would have more power. No. If you were more connected to God and taking your place in your connection to the people of God, you would have the best testimony you could possibly have. Well, if I had sparks flying from my fingers and I could do all kinds of crazy things. No, what's 1 Corinthians 13 say? You can do all that, but you're not in a place where love is being shown and received. It's just that, right? Do you get it? And there's this with. We aren't just with God. We're with one another. The glory that you have given me, I have given to them, so that they may be one, even as we are one. That's the bar. Oh, we don't gossip much. No. Completely different standard. I lay down my life for the sake of the flock. I live because our collective interdependence matters in big, big ways to the heart of God. And this is our verse in our mission verse as a local flock. Only let your manner of life be worthy of the gospel of Christ, so that whether I come and see you or I'm absent, I may hear that you are standing firm in one spirit with one mind, striving side by side for the faith of the gospel. What's the gospel? It's that God is reconciling all things to himself. That's the big gospel. There's a kingdom being built. The gospel of salvation, of justification, is here's the door. Here's who Jesus was. Believe that, and then you can step into this new identity. But the gospel of the kingdom is bigger. It's Jesus reconciling all things to himself. So when we share the gospel, what gospel are we living? What gospel are we proclaiming? We have this glorious opportunity to call people to it. We just finished this book, obviously, in 1 Peter. But I remind us again that he's not just calling you to be a part in relationship individually with him, but he's calling you into this place of being with his people, cooperating so that the world may know, cooperating that there would be power expressed as we're interdependent, cooperating so that those who are weak can be lifted up, so those who are discouraged can be encouraged. You're not intended to walk through the valley of the shadow of death and not have people with you. Not God's design intention for humanity. It is not about you and God. It is about God and a people. And this is what we find in 1 Peter 2. As you come to him, a living stone, speaking of Jesus, rejected by men, but in the sight of God, chosen and precious, you yourselves, like living stones. We talked about this a few weeks ago, and we'll just review it again. Think of yourself as a rock that's alive, not dead. I don't even know what that looks like. But this is the picture. You are a living stone. Why is he using the image of a stone? Because it's a building material. All right? So get over the idea that stones aren't alive. Use your imagination. Get over in that right brain and just run with it here. Living stones. You're a living stone are being built into a spiritual house. That spiritual house is alive. Does that make sense? That's significant. When people look to that house, they see life. They see cooperation. Wait a minute, why am I on the bottom of the wall? Because that's where the master builder put you. And it's glorious. Well, I want to be up there. Really? You want God to not have his way in your life? Yeah, just insist on being something that he didn't ever intend you to be. What a bad idea. Whatever God intended me, I don't like my gifts. I don't like my name. I don't like so many things that have been given to me. But I rest that God had a hand in it. And he put me and placed me. I don't like that my entire extended family is on anti-anxiety medication or alcoholics, one of the two. I don't like that. That's my pathology. And I handed some broken things in that and just broken genetics to my kids. I don't like it. I am happy to be the rock that you step on or never see. I'm a part of a living house. He's the master builder. As we cooperate and we don't insist on our rights. Well, I want to do that. Why can't I do that? Because God said, this is what I have for you. Do it well. And the world will know. The world will know. You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people, not a person, a people for his own possession. It is so different than the American way of thinking. When we are on our own trying to manipulate our outcomes and our best life now and how we can control things, rather than staying with our hand in the hand of God, saying, you lead us as a people. You lead us as a people. When it's time to go, we go. When it's time to cooperate, we cooperate because we do not see ourselves as independent from the body you're forming. And he wants to do that all over the world. He wants to do that in every tribe and tongue and people and nation. Create pockets of interdependent peoples who love him and are willing to submit to his plan. And then cooperate in his plan of reconciling all things to himself. This is no more significant than any other flock, but it's more significant to me because this is where God put me. Does that make sense? He said, oh, look, we're so awesome. No, we're just this flock. And God is pleased when we walk as this flock with the limitations and the strengths and the opportunities and we cooperate and we don't disdain what he's called us to be and do. We rest in it. And we can bless every other flock around the world. Say, go. We can help you. I pray for you guys up in Casper a lot. I want to see God do things. through you. I want every flock to be healthy. I want every flock to bear the image of God. I want every flock to be in cooperation and walking in oneness in such a way that the world knows, the world around them says, you are different. I see something different, and it's pleasant. It's an aroma of life to those who are getting saved. That's what being with is. As we walk through the next few weeks, again, we don't know how it'll completely roll out. There are patterns of living that our flesh will be drawn to that are not this. And that's really our hope, is that we can better identify what are the temptations, what are the challenges, what are the things that kind of get us off track from walking with God and with God as a people. What are the temptations of our culture, of our flesh, of the world in general? Where does the devil push on us and say, stop? And hopefully be more aware to be able to redirect when those things come at us, when we're tempted, call out for help or understanding or move towards what's true. And that's really the hope of this message series, is to help us just kind of identify some of those things and more fully understand what it means to be with him. Just to be with him. And that's what we'll strive to do. Let's just pray. Father, I'm so grateful that you've not left us as orphans. You've solved all of the problems that keep us from reconnecting and being reestablished in relationship with you, to be back face to face even as before the fall in terms of relationship. There's nothing else that will be added when you come back. Relationally, nothing will be added. Circumstantially, lots of cool things will be added, but right now we are in the fullness of relationship with you. We have all the Spirit, all of your presence, all of the opportunity, and I pray, God, we would make that the desire of our hearts. We don't want to settle for small things, small living, just being safe. We want to be on an adventure with you. Help us to walk that out and to encourage each other in that walk. In Jesus' name. Amen.